for Leologos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Leologos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now. This is the Leologos Radio, the radio program which bridges the worldwide Greek community and which airs on a network of 25 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and on today's broadcast, the Leologos interview series will feature part 1 of a long-awaited interview with the respected Greek economist and author Spiros Levdiotis, who is a former analyst for the Central Bank of Canada. The author of 3 books, Mr. Levdiotis will speak to us today in the first portion of our interview with him about the history of austerity as economic doctrine, what the ancient Greeks can teach us about dealing with debt, and what modern-day Greece can do to deal with its debt burden. That's coming up in part 1 of our interview with Spiros Levdiotis, which begins now here on Leologos Radio and the Leologos interview series. The Leologos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next here on Leologos Radio. Joining us today on Leologos Radio and the Leologos interview series is the economist and author Spiros Levdiotis. A former analyst for the Central Bank of Canada, Levdiotis is the author of 3 books on the Greek economy, as well as a number of articles and analyses. And Mr. Levdiotis, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, and I'm very glad to be able to speak after years in English.
To get us started, share with us a few words about your background as an economist, including your time at the Central Bank of Canada.
Well, my background goes back more than 40 years, started from Greece. I was at the University, at the Aristotelian University of Salonika, where I studied economics and law. And then I moved on to Canada, where I studied economics at the York University, where I obtained my master's degree in economics, and then I moved on to University of Toronto doing studies, PhD studies in economics, and at the same time I completed the MBA course at the University of Toronto, where the Bank of Canada hired me, and then instead of going to be academic, I moved on from Toronto to Ottawa, where is the headquarters of Bank of Canada. And I worked there as first doing forecast for Canada savings bonds and also in the monetary sections and security sections of the bank, and then handling the portfolio, stock portfolio of the bank. And I left with a position of a senior financial analyst, and moved to Athens. And since then in Athens, as well, I worked for the Commercial Bank of Greece in handling the international portfolio of the bank, of the stocks, and as well for the Olayan Group, in which I was responsible for the foreign exchange, and as well for the derivative products and options operations of the group. Since then, I did founded the a brokerage firm dealing with the Athens Stock Exchange, the so-called Capital Securities, where I was the shareholder, chief financial officer, and also responsible for the operations of the company. And at the same time, I dealt with the foreign investments and as well dealing as a head of management operations of securities and also setting up the investment program. The last years I've been seriously been preoccupied with the connection of ancient philosophy and economics, because for some reason there is a tremendous connection of the principles of what the ancients, like Aristotle, like Xenophon and Plato, have said at that time about how to optimize and augment the well-being of a nation. And the principles, actually, the name economics, it's a Greek name. It has been developed in a dialogue between Socrates and some of his students in a dialogue which is called Economikos and wrote by Xenophon. And I found tremendous principles there which could help the new Greeks to understand and try to interconnect, because what we studied in economics starts in all Western civilizations from Adam Smith and from the physiocrats, the French physiocrats. But actually, as a matter of fact, the physiocrats, what they have taken most of the ideas, okay, from the economicos of Xenophon. And also Aristotle in his Polit has tremendous principles. This is the first time that this type of work, okay, has been done in Greece and never have been connected, the ancient thought with the modern thought. So this is a very difficult work, but I enjoy it because I see tremendous value of what the ancient Greeks have said and how this marvelous Athenian democracy was developed.
We are on the air here on the Alagos Radio with economist and author Spiros Lavdiotis, former analyst for the Central Bank of Canada. Let's begin our discussion by looking at austerity. Share with us a few words about austerity as an economic doctrine in its modern form and how this doctrine developed.
The modern form, this doctrine of austerity, has been developed in the meeting of Toronto of the countries, of the 20 countries, of the so-called G20. And it was there when it was a split in the opinion in that high-level meeting. The split of the opinion of the Americans, which they espoused the principles of Keynesianism in trying to recuperate from the tremendous financial crisis of 2008, when the whole financial system collapsed, particularly after the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers in September 2008. Together with the United States, espoused the principles of Keynes, were India, Russia, and China. At the same time, the Europeans splitted from this idea. They thought that they, in order to save their own weak financial system, that austerity is the only way, to do it. Because what happened with this, with the crisis that started in the States with the so-called subprime loans and developed in a fashion, in a snowball fashion, to a great extent, it disseminated its waves to the European system, which was weaker than the U.S. system. And due to the fact that the Eurozone is not built on sound principles, it is a legal construction which is incomplete, because there is no political union and there is no banking union and there is no financial union. The financial, a system which all the finances of the states to be degraded. There is no such a thing. Just simply it was a creation, a reverse creation, starting from a legal structure of the monetary union, then trying to instigate a political union, completely reversed. It's very unusual. It's never happened again in the history of civilization, this type of thing. So as a result, when the crisis came, everything fell apart. They didn't know what to do. And in effect, in a statement, in a bulletin which was issued by the ECB, the European Central Bank, in May 2010 said that they admit they were in a state of complete collapse. They didn't have any mechanism, nothing. So they tried to save themselves, particularly the Germans, that they had the biggest exposure that they had in the system. They were the German banks and the French banks. And they decided not to apply Keynesian principles and to follow austerity. Austerity is a dangerous policy because it means that a country that has financial problems due to the budget and due to deficits in foreign exchange, in other words, the so-called balance of payments, in order to alleviate itself, it has to impose austerity measures. And how this is going to work? What the theory said, through confidence. And what is confidence? They say that when people and investors see that there is stability and the country can be saved, then confidence is going to build the so-called feeling for growth. Unbelievable things. That's why it was called the measures of austerity. They were called friendly to growth measures. There's no such a thing. These things never worked. And just I remind the people that actually that was the case in the crisis of 1930s, that Herbert Hoover, that was then president of the United States before Roosevelt, did the same mistake, tried to balance the budget, and the situation deteriorated. As a result, then he was defeated in the elections of 1932, and then Roosevelt came in, and the first thing that, again, it was a financial crisis. It was a banking system crisis. And then Roosevelt, in his inauguration speech, said the first thing that attacked the bankers and immediately closed the banks and the whole system. He went to moratorium, voted for extension of loans by the central bank to the weak banks, and then the American economy started recuperating, but also it was Roosevelt that imposed, actually instituted for the first time in history, the so-called Social Security System and the FDIC. That's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Then they were incorporated for the first time of the capitalist system. So here in Athens, what happens, that is, the situation was more severe because they miscalculated the so-called multiplier effects of the policies which they imposed on debt and on incomes. With the result, the Greek economy to collapse completely. And in the second year of the imposition in 2011, of the measures, the GDP collapsed by 7% in 1 year. So far, in other words, all these measures, which they were called, okay, reforms, they were not reforms. They were, in effect, okay, a killing measures for the economy and for the salaries and pensions of people. Just reminding you that in this country, 50% of the income generated, or the so-called national income, it arises from pensions. It was a total catastrophe. And the unemployment rate from 7.8% shot up again to 28%, and still remains with artificial means at 23%. It is a situation very, I would say, dismal, because people have no hope about finding a job completely, okay, they immigrate. And so far, the immigration rate has reached a level of more than 600,000 people, from which 250,000 are educated people with degrees, being unable to find anything decent here. Overall, the GDP from 2008 till now has fallen by 28%. This is the longest in time and magnitude drop of in growth in economic terms of any so-called named developed countries. This never happened before. Even in the so-called Great Depression in the States, the unemployment rate reached 25%, and it took only 3 years to start recovering. In other words, after 1933, 1934, it was the bottom. and since then stopped growing. But of course, as you very well know, we had the Second World War in 1940, so the situation cannot be compared.
We are speaking with economist and author Spiros Lavdiotis, former analyst for the Central Bank of Canada, here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Interview Series. In your opinion, why is there such a great insistence on economic austerity, such as in the case of Greece, and are there any examples that you can identify where any country was able to emerge from a financial crisis and return to growth as a result of austerity?
Not to my knowledge. Always, as I tried to mention before, that's why I mentioned the name of Herbert Hoover, the previous president before Franklin Roosevelt take over, tried to impose austerity, and in 2 years the whole situation was very severe. There is not such an example in the history of economics. I do not know how they developed this type of friendly to growth austerity. That's unbelievable. This is a myth. There is no such a thing friendly to growth austerity. They tried to save the financial system of Europe that was collapsing. At the same time, Germany went ahead and accepted this because they want to maintain the free zone intact in the whole EEC, the European Union. And, of course, as you know, there are only 9 countries which do not participate in the so-called Eurozone. But the main thing was for Germany to maintain the primacy of its export power. And in order to do that, in this modern era, you have to maintain the financial system, because Eurozone provides a uniform platform where, following the principle of free trade, which are the 3 basic principles, economic principles of the Maastricht Treaty, it's the freedom of commerce, freedom of services, and freedom of labor. And, of course, that presupposes freedom of capital. So, as a matter of fact, since euro is based on an irrevocable exchange, that we cannot change, it's not, in other words, the Bretton Woods. The Bretton Woods was the gold standard, but if a country was in a fundamental disequilibrium, they could devalue up to 10% and try to get out more easily out of the predicament. Now, with euro, you cannot. As long as you entered with an exchange, which it was determined then, that's it. Nothing you can do. It is like an iron chain in which you enter, and if you cannot fit from the very beginning, as it happened in Greece, because they had, as you very well remember, to change the so-called statistics and do some things very unethical in order to enter. But they knew, the European knew that the Greeks were cooking the numbers, but they wanted to sell, the Germans wanted to sell the ships, fregatas in Greece, and planes, the same with the French, and therefore they closed the eyes. That's why they wanted to have Greece there, due to the fact that they can expand their own markets to Greece due to different economic development, different industrial development of the countries, and at the same time not having to be afraid of devaluation. And that was the main concern of Germany, because at the beginning, Germany was exporting 2/3 of their products to European countries. Then it shifted and started exporting, okay, in Asia, with the biggest market of China. But just remember that even now, exports in Germany's GDP constitute the 46% of the whole GDP, gross domestic product of the German economy. So, and they had the power to institute this policy, and the Greek politicians decided to protect the banks. And this was a mistake. It was a mistake. I don't know what happened, and the involvement always was just an interlocking interest between the politicians and the banking system in Greece. But I think it was also an ignorance. They didn't know to what extent that relationship and accepting to pass in the national budget these tremendous losses of the banking system to the Greek taxpayer, and the amounts are tremendous, because they involve a sum of 240 billion plus, which is in relation to GDP. Greece has a GDP of 175 billion. That's it. This is the latest number. Closing year 2016. So when we have an economy, such a small economy, producing 165 billion worth, and you transfer 240 billion of losses of a banking system that have nothing to do with the Greek economy, you can imagine this is a percentage close to 150% of GDP. It is like saying that the U.S. went in 2008, went to save the U.S. banking system from collapse. It sacrificed about, in effect, close to 10 trillion then. But then the GDP of the U.S. was 17 trillion. Right now, it is the same thing like saying that the Greek economy could carry in its shoulders such a weight as the U.S. was at that time to place funds in excess of 25 trillion. You see, there's a big difference that, in effect, because Greece, the U.S. still has its own monetary system. It has the Federal Reserve and can print money. But in Eurozone, no, in order to enter, all the countries have to give up their sovereignty of creating money. So the monetary sovereignty was given to the so-called to European Union, where, in effect, it had only one institution, the European Central Bank. And therefore, you're transferring all the rights of creating money to one institution, which then, in order for you to have money, they would lend you by charging interest, but not directly to the states, only to the banking system. So the state had to finance from there on, as long as you enter the Eurozone, its own expenses and the coverage of all programs for health, for welfare, and whatever expenses that were necessary for the state, it had to borrow. And to borrow from whom? Because the ECB does not directly lend the state. It had to borrow from the private sector. And the private sector had to borrow the funds from the ECB, which was charging interest. And then the commercial bank had to charge an extra interest to make a profit to lend the money to the Greek state. And what happened then? The Greek state had to charge the taxpayers with higher taxes in order to cover those expenses. And over the years, didn't even pass many years, because we entered in physical form in the European zone, monetary zone, in 2002. In 2008, we were already bankrupt. But simply, they did not announce that publicly. Internationally, they didn't know that the problem of the Greek state was mostly the banking system. They were saying the corrupt Greeks. Yes, they were corrupt Greeks. And the politicians are really very corrupt in Greece. This is acknowledged, but the politicians never behaved, placing the state, the common good, ahead of their own selves. This is true, but that was a small part of the ordeal for the Greek people. But right now we're faced, according to the last budget, more than 563 billion, which is the sum of all the debt which occurred due to the banking losses that entered the Greek budget, because there is no fiscal union in Europe.
We are on the air with economist and author Spiros Davdiotis, former analyst for the Central Bank of Canada, here on Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series. Sisakthia is a concept that many of our listeners, and particularly those who are not Greek, may not be familiar with. It is also the topic of one of your books. Tell us about this ancient Greek concept and about the history of debt and bankruptcy in the Greek case.
Well, thank you for the question. That actually makes me feel very good, because there are a lot of similarities of what happened then at the 6th century BC in ancient Athens with what is happening now. Because then ancient Athens was in a great economic ordeal due to the fact that the wealth of the city was accumulated in the most rich people, and the most rich people at that period were simply landowners, and they charged interest between 16% and 36% for those that did not have money and they wanted, okay, to borrow money. At the same time, if an agrarian wanted to cultivate the fields, because all the fields they were owned by them, they had to either pay 1/6 of the gross proceeds of the cultivation to them as a rent, or they have to go and borrow at the rates which at that time were between 16% and 36%. So therefore, eventually, it was impossible to, if it was about to produce 1 year, how would be possible to give the 1/6 of the produce to the landowner? It's not possible. You have to borrow. So therefore, eventually they were going bankrupt. At that time, in the history of civilization, there was not instituted the so-called delendit by giving as a collateral land or whatever items of wealth, okay, you had. You were placing as a collateral your own body, yourself, your wife, and your children. So if you were unable to pay, the creditor was given the right by law, not only in Greece, this goes in all ancient regions, that is, even Asia Minor, even going down to Sumeria, Iraq. And so there was a tremendous problem. Why? Because you were captured and you were sold as a slave. And now the famous place of slave exchange was then at that time the island of Aegina, which is just outside of the port of Piraeus. And you were selling yourself together with the members of the family whenever Achaeus was beaten to buy you. And Solon was the so-called archon. Archon is the highest level of civil officer that was elected by the Athenians to solve this problem, because they had evacuated. Like right now, the Greeks are evacuating Greece. They cannot find jobs, because what they can do? They become criminals, killing other people to live. This is a very serious thing here in Greece, because when we say there's not even unemployment insurance, they say there is, but right now there's 1 million, more than 200,000 people officially unemployed, and they pay unemployment insurance only for less than 10%. And what type of unemployment insurance is? It's 260 euros per month, and only 10%. Actually, with the actual statistics of Greece, 117,000 people only get unemployment insurance. Now, this is the European system, which exists because there is no law and regulation or principle within the European Union, and particularly in Eurozone, which gives a right to work. In other words, while in the States, the Federal Reserve Law specifically says that all monetary policy will be in accordance to, number one, maximum employment, number two, price stability, number three, long-term interest rates, the Constitution, according to the Maastricht Treaty of the European Central Bank, says there is only one goal, and that goal is price stability. That's it. Nothing about employment. They don't even care about anything. This is why people, the Greeks, they have to immigrate, because at the same time there is no law to determine the minimum wage rate, which is at the level at which a human being can really survive decently to live. There is now a law which determines that the minimum wage rate for unskilled labor is 486 euros per month. 486. Now, just think about all of you that you're living either in Canada or in the US or in Australia, and you visited Greece. Is it possible for 486 euros per month a person to live decently? No, cannot. Simply, it is a poverty of a, you reduce a kid to a pauper. It is an undeclared slavery. And even the salaries, because because they're not right now, cannot be fully employed except if you're a civil servant. Even the money that they get, the monthly payments are even lower than that in many instances. As the Minister of Labor in Greece has announced, of about 125,000 people are employed with a salary of less than 100 euros per month. So I say that because the situation is really very severe, and it's not an accident that recently a report announced by a Cologne Institute of Economics, just this recent report, 2nd of March 2017, has said that Greece is in the last place of all European nations, in other words, the nations that are in the European Union, which are 28 nations, that the poverty level in Greece have reached the 40%. Now, that's not far away from what actually the IMF, International Monetary Fund, acknowledged. With the data of 2015, the poverty level in Greece was then 36%. So here we have another confirmation. It's 40% in 2 years, the way that I see it and the way that actually everybody feels. What happens because Greece is a small country is going to be above 50%. However, people, they think this is not important, particularly the academics, that they completely dismissed all those things and they say, okay, we're going to stay in Eurozone without taking into consideration the severe situation, economic situation, which and the predicament in which many people are, and the suffering keeps going. And when I was speaking about Saul, being carried away a little bit by the frightened situation here in Greece, which we are living now, I forgot to tell you that Solon resolved this problem because the Greeks at that time, the Athenians, were deserting Athens. So the fields remained uncultivated. As a result, even the rich people, they said, we have to find a solution to that, and the country, the city was in the verge of civil war. And so they elected Solon because he was famous for his integrity, his knowledge, and actually he was a medium, let's say, in the middle class person, not rich, not poor. Therefore, the rich trust him, and the poor also trusted him because when he was young, actually, he saw characteristics of patriotism. And Solon enacted the Syzactia, and this word remained for centuries, and even now as a word so powerful, which means, Syzactia means I remove the weights of debt. It was the first macroeconomic plan that instituted in a whole civilization. Because the first thing that Solon did is simply to institute laws by which he abolished the lending by placing your body as a collateral. In other words, you have to hypothecate your body. And that was the first thing a human being has established this law in a whole humanity. It was Solon. That's why his name remains still as such a significant light in the development of human civilization. So the next thing that he did was to devalue at that time the Athenian currency, which was the Greek drachma. And by doing that, he devalued the Greek drachma so that to make more competitive the foreign trade of Athens, and at the same time he put incentives for people to come and work for Athens, from other cities at that time that were highly developed, like Corinth and Eretria in Evia, and promising that they're going to give the Athenian citizenship and try to augment or develop the foreign trade in a context that the export, at least of the city, have to be equalized with imports. In other words, Solon was the first person that instituted the principle of, in order for a country to have autarky and to be independent nation, at least the exports have to, the revenues achieved from exports have to be equalized by the revenues given to import. Something that never any Greek state politicians have achieved since Greece officially accepted internationally as an independent nation in 1830. But Solon did it and placed the first principle. And since he achieved those results, which were very welcome by anyone, because Solon was the person that instituted the so-called Ecclesia του Δήμου, which means that the direct democracy, the people were elected directly by people. And the Athenians have voted 21 years continuously, because then you were elected for 1 year and it has to be another vote again, so that to be the head official for another year. At 21 years continuously, he was elected as an Archon of Athens, and it was enough time for him to develop, to take the country out of this economic morass and develop it, placed in one of the highest civilized nations of all that ancient period, which unfortunately we do not have such a politician right now.
We are speaking with economist and author Spiros Davdiotis, former analyst for the Central Bank of Canada, here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. Let's turn now to the issue of the Greek debt. How and in what way could Greece denounce its public debt? And what does international law and international legal precedent foresee for the issue of the debt?
It is very difficult to really try to eliminate the debt legally, because there is no international law which establishes the principles between creditors and debtors when nations are involved. There is international law, and every state has a law, a bankruptcy law, and then that concerns companies, concerns individuals. But in terms of international law that have to deal with creditors and debtors, there are not specific principles. And this is why that the national delegation, for instance, the debtors, have to sit down with creditors and determine bilaterally how they're going to resolve the issue, because nobody can benefit by squeezing the other, like right now, what has happened to Greece. They squeeze, okay, and the Greeks have nothing to do, okay, with the loss of the banks. They're responsible for about all this corruption, 70 billion. But 70 billion is just manageable, because it is less than 50% of gross national product. Why the Greek taxpayer have to pay because of irregularities and anomalies in the European zone, due to the fact this is, as I said before, a legal institution. There is not political unity, not fiscal unity, nothing. Why the Greek people have to pay all these losses? There is no international law that can resolve this issue. And this is one of the reasons is that we have a big advantage to legally and ethically to tell them that, look, okay, we stop payments because our country is impoverished. We are in a humanitarian crisis. Why we have to pay that, the so-called unilaterally? When you make a deal of lending and borrowing, you have two parties. Why the banks get excluded and the borrower have to carry all the weight? It's unbelievable. Why the banks that did all this damage? Because they played in toxic bonds, in various futures markets, in securitized products, which they didn't even understand what was this. And they incurred enormous losses, hundreds of billions. And they placed that on the weight of a small country of 175 billion. What is this now? What type of justice? This is why I'm talking here about the biggest, perhaps, when people realize what happened, the Greek situation and the suffering imposed on all Greeks. Some of them are innocent and all are crooks. They're not all people like this. There are people, particularly in small cities and villages, very, very helpful and with good principles. Why we have to pay all these people to be destroyed economically? And this is going to take more than a generation to put Greece back where it was. Probably not, because as you know right now, the way in which its income in terms of national income and GDP growth is below 2003, has lost already about 15 years back. But in terms of moral values and general values of the Greek people, they've been just completely demoralized. Only now, only 3% of the public believes in politicians. And this is why this situation is not going to go like this. It's the biggest crime, economic crime that has been done. How is it possible not to, to be a legal institution in which all these losses, which involved not only the Greek banks, but also the German banks, French banks, the Dutch banks, passed only to Greece to pay for it, because all, as you know, the international system are interconnected through the euro, which creates an international platform of moving, okay, freely capital from one country to another. And at any time, any money can be transformed that has accepted euro and transfer the funds from Athens, okay, to Berlin, from Berlin to Frankfurt, from Frankfurt to Paris. All these losses were actually sustained by the Greeks because the politicians accepted that. This is why it's going to be an issue that is not is going to last, because the sums are huge. According to the national budget, which was voted and passed in December 2016, the Greek budget for this year has in it receipts from credit money, in other words, you borrowed money, of 563 billion. In other words, the total budget of the Greek state is 614 billion, while the revenues of the Greek state are 50 billion, of which 46 billion come from taxes. However, the budget amounts to 614 billion because they placed in the funds that the Greek state owns, which are, as I said before, 563 billion. It's unbelievable. This is 320% more than the gross national product of the country. And it's signed by the president, the Greek president, and by the Minister of Economics of Greece. Now, that's a fact. This is truth. We cannot dispute that. And this is what, okay, any government, if a change happens, is that this is, has to change this. How is it possible the Greeks to have taken, okay, this money and to benefit it by this money, and at the same time the economy is collapsing 28% and more than 23%, there were 28% again unemployed. You can understand here the impasse and the unfairness and what has happened against the Greek state. And a lot of people outside have realized this, that they're talking about the looting of Greece. Because now, in order to pay that, they say you have to sell all the public assets. But how is it possible to pay the public assets when, in this period, in this modern period, money is created out of nothing, because it was a mistake of the politician giving this right, okay, to ECB. And now you have to sell what our fathers and our ancestors have tried to create, and they fought for this land, not to sell that, to pay interest, which the interest already we have paid since we entered this, the so-called memorandums, 60 billion in terms, and they call it, okay, solidarity. 60 billion. And now they tell us that we have to remain in Eurozone, and since the new calculations, all the expected payments that the Greek state has to do up to 2030, in other words, in about 13 years from now, is that we have to pay them 160 billion in interest. What is this? This is usury. This is one of the most extreme forms of usury. How is it possible, okay, to survive? To survive another 13 years paying interest to them? Everything is going to fall apart. If under the epoch of Solon they were in emergency, they were escaping Athens to save their skins and not to be caught and sold as slaves, here no decent person can remain. We have to understand, I'm not exaggerating. Now, this is the situation of this Eurozone legalization. In other words, the legal laws that they passed creating this union, which have nothing to do with humanity. It's just simply an interest scheme, paying scheme, for those countries that are richer than you. And the countries that are richer than you are the countries of Northern Europe. This is why the South Europe has almost collapsed, and we would see this year whether Italy, which is the key, can really, okay, save their own banking system.
We are on the air here on Diálogos Radio with economist and author Spyros Lavdiotis, former analyst for the Central Bank of Canada, and we will talk in further detail in part two of this interview about the steps that Greece could take to depart from the Eurozone in an orderly fashion. But based on what you have told us about the debt, would it be correct to say that Greece would be able to undertake unilateral actions to declare a stoppage of payments or to denounce or write down a debt once it leaves the Eurozone and returns to a national domestic currency?
We should remember that we are a member of the Eurozone. In other words, we will not take a unilateral action. The declaration of bankruptcy of the Greek state, in other words, the de jure bankruptcy of the nation, will take place while the country is still having euro as its currency. In other words, the government declares moratorium, which means that just a temporary stoppage of payments for 6 months to foreign lenders. And at the same time, the government immediately starts negotiation with the European authorities, the European Commission and the ECB, so that to expose to them the main problem of the Greek debt, that the Greek debt that has been accumulated according to the budget of 2017, having also the signature of the president of the Greek state, it amounts to 563 billion euros, which are credit receipts, which means they are owed because the lenders force the Greek government to pass all the future debt of the Greek state. And you know the program, the time schedule of the Greek debt extends to 2060. And this means that the ratio of debt to GDP, it exceeds 320%. Now, this amount, most of it, about 95%, has not taken place because of the extravaganza and deficits of the Greek state. 95% are debts which have been incurred by the banking system, a whole system, not only the banks, but also the whole euro system, involving mainly German banks and French banks, which have led the Greek banks, and therefore these payments are related to the whole Eurozone and not to the Greek state alone, and particularly the tax papers of the Greek state. Now, we, for that reason, we're going to expose all the official records with the help of a task force appointed by experts from other states, in other words, an international task force, which would verify that this is the case. In other words, what was published recently, 1 year ago, by the Technical and Management University of Berlin, which actually determined that the two initial memorandums involving, in other words, the amounts of $240 billion that were given to the Greek states under the name of bailouts, they were not given to bail out Greece. They were given to bail out the banking system. And according to the study, only less than 5% has gone for the Greek economy, and less, in other words, about 95.5% went for repaying the debt and losses of the banking system of Europe as a whole. In other words, the Eurozone, because that's the problem that was created due to the inflexibility of the euro system, because euro has irrevocable exchange rate, and after the crisis, the global crisis in 2008, which was actually a financial crisis, it was impossible to cope with. And for some reason, the Greek politicians accepted this fact. In other words, the losses of all the euro system to be taken by Greece and be paid by the Greek taxpayer, while these losses involve the whole system as a whole, because the system, the euro system, actually is a system which is very incomplete, has many faults, and as a matter of fact, it's a creation which, unfortunately, they put the carriage in front and the horse on the back.
What happens, though, in the event that Greece does not find that the Europeans are willing negotiating partners on the issue of the debt?
In my view, that would be almost impossible and irresponsible, because Greece has in its hands a bomb, a huge bomb of debt. And if they do not accept, which in effect it is true, and as a matter of fact, they're not going to violate the ethical principles. They're going to expose the whole system to great dangers, because due to the systemic risk that is involved in the banking system, the European banks are not only connected with the Greek banks, which are really bankrupt, but also to the American banks, which, according to the analysis of certain financial analysts, even now, the American banks are exposed to a tune of more than $3 trillion of U.S. dollars to the European banks, and therefore some analysts say that actually the Greece case is like Lehman Brothers squared. And this is why it is so dangerous, and this is actually explains the political stance that even the previous government Obama took and joined hands with the European authorities and simply let the Greeks bear this huge burden which does not belong to them. As I said, 95% is given, all the loans Greece is taking is given back. Save the banks and not the Greek state.
This wraps up part one of our interview with economist and author Spiros Davdiotis, a former analyst for the Central Bank of Canada, here on the Alagos Radio. Stay tuned for our upcoming English language broadcast for part two of this interview, where Mr. Davdiotis will discuss how Greece could depart from the Eurozone and why, in his view, this is the best option for Greece. Follow the Alagos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/thealagosmedia and at twitter.com/thealagosmedia. Find the Alagos Radio's programming in iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can now download our podcasts and listen to the Alagos Radio 24/7 anytime, anywhere in iTunes, iPhones, iPads, and on Apple TV. Check us out today in Apple Podcasts and in iTunes Internet Radio. Take the Alagos Radio on the go with you with the new the Alagos Radio app for Android devices. Now you can listen live to the Alagos Radio and the Alagos Radio 24/7, download our podcasts, and read our latest articles all in our free Android app, available now in the Google Play Store. The podcast of this interview will soon be available on our website, thealagosmedia.org, in the Alagos Radio apps for Android, Kindle, BlackBerry, and Chrome, in Apple Podcasts, TuneIn.com in a Windows Store, and in the Nobex Radio, WeCast, Player FM, Stitcher, and Podbean apps. Today's broadcast of the Alagos Radio is just about ready to come to a close, but stay tuned 2 weeks from today for our next English language broadcast and for part two of our interview with economist Spiros Davdiotis. Greece, where he will detail for us how Greece can depart from the Eurozone in an orderly fashion and why he believes it is in Greece's best interest to do so. That's coming up 2 weeks from now, and until then, for Diálogos Radio, this is Michael Navradakis. Thanks for joining us today.
Χρόνια με χτυπάτε, χρόνια στέκομαι. Χρόνια με πουλάτε και τα νέχομαι. Χρόνια ο σκοπός σας να φανιστώ. Έλληνας χαμένο. Πρόγραμμα βατό, Έλληνας δαμένος, γη χωρίς Θεό. Μα εγώ είμαι Έλληνας, δεν θα πεθάνω, υπήρξα άρχοντας στον κόσμο απάνω. Είμαι αυτός που σου έχει μάθει τ' αλφαβητάριο μη κάνεις λάθη. Εγώ σε γέννησα, σε έχω ανατρέψει κι ό,τι δικό σου μου το έχεις κλέψει. Μα εγώ είμαι Έλληνας, πάντα αντάρτης, άνθρωπος δίκαιος και δημοκράτης. Κι ανέβω κι η ψυχή σου χαίρεται. Τώρα ξεπουλέμαι, μα ποιος Θεός το δέχεται. Τώρα μου ζητάτε τα υπάρχω μου, ως και την ψυχή μου που έχω πάνω μου. Δεν θα μου τα πάρεις ούτε από τον τάφο μου. Μα εγώ είμαι Έλληνας, δεν θα πεθάνω, υπήρξα άρχοντας στον κόσμο απάνω. Είμαι αυτός που σου έχει μάθει τ' αλφαβητάριο μη κάνεις λάθη. Εγώ σε γέννησα, σε έχω αναθρέψει κι ό,τι δικό σου μου το έχεις κλέψει. Μα εγώ είμαι Έλληνας, πάντα αντάρτης, άνθρωπος δίκαιος και δημοκράτης. Μα εγώ είμαι Έλληνας, ευλογημένος, σε επαναστάσεις αναθρεμμένος. Έχω παλέψει, έχω νικήσει, μεριά ανήμερα έχω λυγίσει. Δεν κάνω πίσω, θα πολεμήσω και τους ρουφιάνους θα τους διαλύσω. Αυτούς Ελλάδα μου που χρόνια τώρα τον δρόμο σ' άνοιξαν στην κατηφορά.